Don't move. Keep it locked. You already know. You are listening to the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. And we're having conversations with dope dads covering the four pillars of fatherhood. We call it the Fit Fatherhood Formula. Faith, family, finance, and fitness. That's right. These dads are setting the pace in business and fatherhood. This show isn't only about the outside success. We're getting down to who you are. Gentlemen, it's time to get fit. And now, let's get into the show.
Alright, cool.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It gave us a little trouble there to start, but we're here.
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. I saw the same thing. It started going through and then paused and reset. And I always find these things, there's always a bit of a glitch trying to get it going. But I'm glad we're all here. How's your week been?
The week has been good, man. It's been busy. Being back when school, my wife was actually out of town all last week, so I got to be a single parent, so to speak, for a week. But she's back now, so it's not as busy as it was last week, but still busy. Still got, you know, all the stuff going on, all the different things that the kids have going on, and work and business, and you know, all the usual.
Yeah, no. It gets tricky with the kids when you're trying to juggle all the things. So yeah, no, I get that. We've got here, I'm on the West Coast, so we actually got a big dump of snow, which for us is super rare. So that's made things a little interesting as well. And schools are still open, or for my boys anyway. And yeah.
Where are you at?
So I'm in Victoria, which is really near Vancouver, in Canada. So Seattle-like weather. So it's okay. Pretty mild. So when we get snow, we're not ready for it. It's we don't know how to drive or dress for the snow.
Yeah, that's funny, man. Do you guys get snow often, or is that like a once in a while kind of thing?
Pretty rare here. Last winter we didn't get snow at all. So this is the first snowfall of this year. Probably going to be the last. So.
Yeah.
It's wet. So it comes in, it's wet, it's sticky, it'll get icy, and then they don't disappear. But for now, everything seems to be shut down and tricky.
Don't feel bad, man. I lived in Michigan for 5 years, and they get snow all the time. And no matter what, it's like people have never driven in snow before. it just never happened. People are sliding all over the roads for at least the first month or so. And it's the same thing here in Southern California. When it rains, because it doesn't rain that often, but when it rains, the freeways are a mess. It's an absolute mess. It's like we've never seen rain before.
Oh, exactly. So yeah, so I'm excited to be on here and chatting with some stuff. I think this will be a lot of fun. So I don't know if you want to dive into it or how you want to go.
Yeah, I mean, like normally with the podcast is just conversational, but you know, with lives, I guess it's the same thing, man. I just, you know, it was funny is they don't know this, but they know now, is we're just kind of getting to know each other in the world, right? Everybody gets to kind of be a fly on the wall, you know, with two dads talking fatherhood, talking investment, talking, you know, all the things that are life for us. So I think that's pretty cool. And then with the lives too, is people can ask questions or chime in a little bit and get to be interactive. And that's always really cool. Right before you hopped on, and you probably heard me say this, I haven't done a live in a while. And I was I went to look back at it, and it was probably like, and this is not, I don't care about the numbers, but it was like 100,000 followers ago. So people don't know me to do lives, right? They've never seen one before. And just because of the way my schedule works, my life works, I don't really get a whole lot of time to just sit in front of my phone to do stuff like this. And so I'm going to make a conscious effort to do more of it. And that's why when we were messaging, I was like, let's do a live, because I haven't gotten a chance to do one. So I appreciate you pushing me into it and getting me out of my comfort zone and back in front of the people in real time.
Yeah, no, I love it. I mean, the nice thing about lives is, like you said, you get the feedback, so you can talk to people right away. But also it has that nice informal feel, so people can sort of just drop in and see what it is like when, you know, you meet someone for the, you know, the first time, where you start chatting and talking and how that flow goes and where the questions lead, and it sort of has a little less formality to it. So
yeah,
I definitely find it's fun.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of get to the business part of it, I guess. Tell me a little bit about you, what you got going on, because I'm relatively new to you and your all the things that you have going on. And there's a lot of stuff now, so take your time, go through it all. Like I was kind of briefly going through everything. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have to let him do this because it's too much going on here.
Yeah, I mean the sort of Cliff Note short version. I mean, I definitely refer to myself as like a speaker, author, and then dad. I throw in there because I really love embracing that as part of my identity, and love just being a dad and having those conversations. And on the speaker and author side of things, so I always was a bit of a finance nerd and read these things when I was a young kid, but I realized most people hate talking financial literacy and don't really understand too much about their finances. So as my boys started getting older, I was looking for ways to teach them some of this stuff, but in a fun way, because I mean, they don't like it either. So I tried to figure out how to make this fun. And so I wrote a graphic novel that teaches kids about money and sort of reaching them where they want to be reached in this fun story and teach these concepts. But really where my stuff's a little bit different, and this is sort of why I thought it'd be nice to reach out as well. It's a little less about just the money side of things, but more about like the mindset and what really lights you up. And that's what I'm sort of on a mission right now to do, is build this community of people where we start talking money mindfulness, what's really important to you, focus on that first, because I find if we don't focus on that piece, then we fall into this trap of just endlessly chasing more. And I'm sure you found this too. It doesn't matter where you are financially, you're just chasing the next thing. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that chase never ends unless you really nail down what's important to you. So that's what I'm really trying to push, is that mindset shift to really start changing these conversations and get people to, stop that chase and start recognizing they actually can start figuring out what's important to them, and make that the focus instead of what everyone else tells you should be the focus.
Yeah, I love that, man. Like one of the what I call the four pillars of fatherhood is finance, because as a father, as a leader, that's obviously a big component of who you are and what you provide to your family. And I wanted to, this year specifically, I'm trying to make a bigger push into the finance piece of it, because we've talked about the family part. The family part is huge and it's very important, and that's probably, I would say, one of the bigger pieces of the whole fatherhood thing. But the finance, the fitness, the faith part of it, those are all really important too, because they create a whole, like a 360 father, I would say. But finance is huge, because I'm personally trying to lock in and hold in on making sure that my finances are completely in order. We make a really good amount of money between my wife and I, and I still sometimes, like you said, I feel like I'm chasing more money. It's like I feel like I'm constantly trying to find ways to, well, we should just make some more money. And not that we're not comfortable. I think we're very, very comfortable, but it's like there's always this urge to kind of go chase the bag, I guess is probably the best way to say it. But so in talking to you, and the book is awesome too, because that allows your children to kind of have an idea. What I mean, you mentioned it, your kids are getting older and you want to teach them about it, but what made you decide to do a book for like everybody? You know what I mean? It could have been something where you just taught your own children how to do it and kept it in the family. What inspired you to write a book?
So, I mean, initially it was just meant to be in the family. I thought, look, I want to write down, like, if something happened to me, what are the things that are really important that I'd want to pass down? And how do I just make sure that this becomes a bit of a legacy where they could then pass it down to their kids? And in that process, I started talking to other parents and other kids. And that's where I realized how important it was and how much we're not teaching these things. Because there's a lot of books on, money and finance, and we think we have it, but everyone's having the same struggle. And exactly like you said, you're doing well, but it really, I've found it doesn't matter. Because what happens is, as more money comes in, we just move into a bigger house, or we start buying bigger toys and spending more. And then we're right back where we started, where to maintain that lifestyle, we have to really work hard, because we're right at the edge always of our lifestyle. And nobody's talking about this. Everyone's talking about, like, this is how to have more money, get a side hustle, here's how to invest, here's how to do all those things to just have all these riches. And no one's really focusing first on what is important. And so that's what really got me excited about this. And then back to your, like you're saying with the family stuff, I found as well, usually when we think finance, we sit our kids down, have this big money talk, we figure out to talk about macroeconomics and all these other things. And most of us as parents, we don't understand that stuff. So we're scared. So we don't have to have that conversation. But I like to integrate it so it's a lot simpler and it's habit. So it doesn't have to be this. So it's integrated with the family. So the same way as you tell your kids, like, say thank you when you sit down, look people in the eye, ask them how their day was. When you get up from the table, take your dishes with you. Like these simple things becomes the same with finances. So when you're going to buy something, hey, this is how much it costs. And then you can pause and is this really what you want, or do you want to think get that other thing you were thinking about, and just start having these conversations, and even in your own purchases, this is what's really important to me. This is why I'm buying this. Oh, I bought this shirt on sale, and you know what? I thought it was a deal, but I regret it now because I haven't even worn the thing. I don't even love it. So letting them just hear like your own internal thoughts, because that's the thing is we don't really talk about finances, especially with our kids.
I was gonna say, I was gonna ask you as I was listening, what do you think is like a good age to start kind of broaching the conversation of finance? Is there like a sweet spot, or do we just start talking about it as soon as we can?
As soon as we can, like that's the thing is if I mean if we want to start talking about how do we start opening up an investment account and understand the stock markets and what is a stock, I mean that's going to be older kids, but that's actually not what's important at all. It's really identifying the value of money and choice, and that we can do super young. So I think of like my boys when they're too young to really understand math and they'd want something, I'd put it in terms of chocolate bars and Lego sets. So they wanted an ice cream or a toy or something at the fair. And I'd be like, okay, well, that's gonna cost three chocolate bars. And you could see, like, even with those young kids, then they're thinking, like, oh, well, I'd rather have three chocolate bars, or I'd rather save up for that teddy bear that I really wanted. And that's what's so amazing is at any age, not any age, but once you can start having a conversation with your kids, these conversations can start. And that's what's really important because I don't think even as adults, we understand that everything we buy is a choice. We just think, can we get it? And it's all just, again, this Mormon mindset and mentality, but it's not, it's everything you get, if you, even if it's, you had nothing but millions and millions and you could buy 50 cars, the reality is it's still a choice. You're not going to drive 50 cars or spend time checking all these out. There's going to be the few that you really like. So everything's taking away from something else. And once you start recognizing, well, what do I really love and what's important to me, it'll start shaping your decisions. And we could do that with 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds. We can have these conversations super early.
Yeah, it sounds like, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier. You talked about a money mindset, right? What is a money mindset? Like, what do you mean when you say that?
So for me, so in the book that I wrote, I wrote The Golden Quest as this graphic novel. And one of the first lessons is only buy the awesome stuff. And it's all based around this idea of the awesome stuff being what's really important to you. And in that, just like as adults, we usually think about it and we're like, oh yeah, like everything I buy is important. Like I love all my stuff. But if we really pause and think about it, like what's your favorite memory? What's your favorite thing? As parents, when we think of our kids, like we know what thing, if they lost it, if we're on a trip and they forgot something or lost it or it broke, we know what's really important to them. And so do our kids. So if we use that sort of as our baseline, that's the thing that you really love, and look at everything under that lens. Do you love it as much as that thing? So the mindset piece is when you're looking at stuff rather than just getting excited and looking around and being like, I want that, I want that, I want that. It's just pausing for a second and saying, hey, is that your awesome stuff? And that same child, the moment they pause and they just think to themselves, is this my awesome stuff? That's the mindset. Like that changes everything. The answer doesn't matter so much. It's that pause, which is massive. So then if I take that, so it sounds like it's hokey and that really won't change much. But if you take that and go back to, say, the child wanting an ice cream when you're at a fair, typically, if we don't want to get the ice cream, we're like, it's too expensive, We just got one. We don't have enough time to stop. We'll tell them whatever we want. And that gives them, that's teaching them a mindset piece. You know, they're not worth it. We don't have enough money. My friends can have it, but I can't. So it's jealousy. It's all these things that they take on with a simple act of the ice cream. When the fact is, we can't buy the ice cream. We just don't want to. And so asking that same child, hey, is that your awesome stuff? And letting them pause and reflect on that ice cream. Is this my awesome stuff? And then realizing, no, what I really want to do is I want to go to that little game down there and play that game instead. That's the mindset piece. It's massive, but it's so simple. And it's just that pausing and reflecting. And instead of saying, no, we can't afford it, saying, is that your awesome stuff? And without any judgment, letting the child pause and answer that question.
Yeah, it sounds like mindfulness, right? Like, I mean, you mentioned that as well. It's like being able to take that pause and really, really figure out if this is what you want or something that you may later on have buyer's remorse on, right? Is it just an impulse buy or something that, you know, it looks cool in the moment? I know for my kids especially, they are, even though we talk about money, we talk about investing, we talk about saving and using, we do all these things, and I got to get them the book so they can look at it and read it themselves. But we go to the grocery store, or if we pass by like a Starbucks, oh man, like they could have just eaten a Thanksgiving dinner, and we drive by a Starbucks and it's like, oh my gosh, we need to get Starbucks. Can I get a brownie? Can I get a pink drink? Can I get a, and I'm like, yeah, you, well, for one, I don't even know where you're going to put it. You just ate everything you could possibly eat. Two, you don't even really want it. You just, it's like, it's an impulse thing. Like you just pass by and Starbucks has done a great job of sugaring you up and you're just craving whatever it is in the moment. But if we get a mile down the road, you'll forget about it. But luckily for Starbucks, they got another Starbucks about a mile and a half down the road. It's going to start back up. Before we go on though, somebody asked a question about, you know, opening up a savings/debit account for a 16-year-old daughter. Put a certain amount in her spending. Do you think this is a good age?
For sure. Like even at an early age, because for me, like when I mentioned like the family thing, I try to integrate all this. So it just becomes habits and it's not something that you really have to think about. So even with younger kids, if they got used to everything that came in, a certain percentage just got saved and you build up that habit. So I think of just like as an adult, imagine if your whole life or when you start getting that those first few jobs in your teens, your 20s, and you took a percentage and saved that and invested it, that the amount of money that would grow to as an adult and the pressure would take off from your finances is massive. So yeah, opening up that saving account and just getting them into the habit. And what I would say is it's not, a lot of times we'll say, look, let's create the savings account so we can buy this big thing that you want to get. And that's one approach, but I'd prefer to have the conversation where you're like, no, this savings is meant to stay there forever because it'll start generating money for you and it'll give you some freedom and it'll give you some space and take a percentage of everything that comes in and put in that savings account. It's a good habit to get into because then once you're in that habit, you just forget about it. You don't even realize. So yeah, no, I definitely recommend that. But I always like the idea of setting up more as a habit. So if you have the account, a certain percentage of everything that came in automatically goes to that account. And over time, that same child will just get used to, oh, okay, now that I'm working and I get a paycheck, I take this and I put it away and I just do that automatically before I do anything else.
Got you. And the book is called The Golden Quest, correct?
Yeah, so The Golden Quest, you can request it at bookstores, you can find it on Amazon, my website, theawesomestuff.com, you can find information on it. So it's readily, easily available. Actually, what I'm really excited about, it just came out to yesterday and the second part came out today. Someone on let me put in the show notes or something or refer to it after, but there's a podcast that basically narrates books and they narrated the entire book with like sound effects and everything else, which is super fun. And that's just readily available for free as well. People want to just get a feel for the book and hear the story. But again, like you said, kids love to, they like to hold something in their hands and actually just feel it.
Okay. Yeah. I gotta go, probably Amazon. Cause that's, I don't like going in stores, but I don't like going in stores anymore. But I do. You know, what's funny is We do go to the bookstore. Like, we'll go to Barnes and Nobles, or we'll go to like the library or things like that. So we will pop in and we'll sit in and read books and hang out. So maybe that'll be a thing. But I was gonna say, I have the two daughters. They both have bank accounts. They both have debit cards that they kind of have and don't have. Like, they don't really care about them. But they, when they want to go buy something, they want to take their car, and it's like this whole experience. Yeah. And I have a spender and I have a saver. Right, my youngest is a saver. Mm-hmm. My oldest is a spender. She's the for sure impulse kid. But it's changed recently because my my youngest has shamed her enough. for spending money. She's always like, you're always broke. Like, you're always spending your money. So if we have someone like that, or a kid like that, or a personality like that, and I think it just kind of comes naturally to her, right? It's not like she's had a whole life of experiences where she's been trained to be a spender, or maybe society has trained her to be a consumer at this age. Is there something or anything that you would suggest doing for maybe even an adult that has the same kind of personality, to be a little bit wiser about their finances?
Yeah. So I love how you said that story, because I've got the same. My older one, spender; younger one, saver, hands down. And it's just personality. And what we do is we do shame our spenders, which is terrible, I think, because then that, like, I mean, all the stuff you're talking about, you know, family, faith, community, all these things, that, like, it really shapes people. All these negative feelings, they take it on. They start feeling that shame. And
I know. The podcast is just starting to get good to you, but I've got something incredible that I want to share with you. And it's not just a program, it's a journey. It's the Present Provider Bootcamp. Now picture this: engaging video sessions, practical worksheets, and a community that's led by yours truly. It's a roadmap to excel in both your career and your family life. If you're ready to redefine your work-life balance, head on over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and join the Present Provider Bootcamp today. Let's thrive together, dads.
I really want to try to change the conversation so we don't start attaching these negative emotions to money. So with my saver, it's fine. He feels great. He's a saver. Everyone applauds him. The spender never has anything. And I could feel, like, he's 14 now, and I could feel him sort of getting a little concerned. He's even asking, like, Dad, like, am I going to be okay? And about it, like, he knows he's a spender and he can't help it. Everything he sees, he wants to get. And so this is where it comes back to just developing those habits. So you can be a spender and still develop the habit. So what I've told him is, look, if everything that comes in, you took 20% and just automatically saved it. It was just gone. And you build up that habit. If you end up spending the rest, I mean, I wouldn't make that choice. I'm a saver. But if you spend it, that's fine. You're still going to be financially sound, because that money invested will grow. And in another 20 years, the money it'll be earning will be more than your income. So setting up that habit and creating that space, that's how we sort of overcome a lot of this stuff. Forcing saving onto someone who just, they just aren't, is almost impossible. So set up the habits and just tell her, look, this is the habit. Again, the mindfulness helps maybe readjust what they spend their money on. But some people are just spenders. And I think the sooner we embrace it as just like, that's who they are. So let's build the habits to work around it rather than try to change who they are. Let's build those habits and just help them out. I think the sooner we take away some of the shame around it, because it's, my younger one tries to shame the older one all the time as well. And you see it, and it's light and it's fun and it's banter and it's just sibling bickering at this age.
Right.
But I do worry what that looks like as adults.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, well, my mother is a spender for sure. And so I kind of get it from her. I would say that I'm a spender, but we were poor for a long time. So I learned to window shop really well. And even to the point where, like, I'll go in and I'll go to the store, like go to a clothing store, go to clothing shopping. and I'll find a bunch of stuff I like and talk myself out of it before I get to the register. Like if you give me enough time, like I'll go in, I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna get these shoes, I'm gonna get the shirt. And then by the time I get to the register, I might have one thing. And it's, that's what's kept me or given me the ability now as an adult to be better about saving money, because I won't allow myself to spend it because I didn't have it to spend before. But I don't want that, you know, I don't want my daughters, like, if you want something and you actually want it, if it's the, as you said, the awesome stuff, then go get it. I don't want you to be like, I can't have this. I you know, kind of putting this kind of negative connotations on the things that you want, need, or desire. Those are still things, but then, you know, like you mentioned, having the space and clarity of mind to be like, you know, maybe I can wait on this. Let me sleep on it. Let me see if I actually really want it, or is it just, it does it just look good right now? Is it shiny right now? And will it be shiny tomorrow when I wake up?
Well, in that mindfulness piece, so this is where I love the mindfulness piece, because what we're usually taught is, you know, budgeting or saving or delayed gratification. And those aren't bad, but it's not really working because it's so tough. But if you took that same experience where you're in and looking at the shopping and all these shoes and clothes, and instead, if you were a bit more mindful and knew really what was important to you. So if you were like, you know what, I want to save up for this trip so I can go with my daughters and go on it. Or, you know, we really had this idea of, you know, buying bikes for the family or whatever it might be. If you know that's the thing that you're really excited about, and then when you use that as your reference point of everything else, it makes it a little bit easier. Then you're like, well, would I rather have the shoes or would I rather have this? And sometimes it will be the shoes, but at least you've got a bit of a reference point. So it's less about, I can't have this thing, or I'm good because I'm just going to avoid it. It's more about, no, I choose this instead. And once you choose this instead, now you're feeling that empowerment and autonomy, and you don't feel the lack because you're actually choosing what you love versus not having something you want.
Yeah, that's very important. I don't want that to go over anybody's head. I don't want them to miss it, because choosing or having the choice or making the choice is very, very powerful and empowering. Instead of, like you said, feeling like I can't do it, it's instead I'm choosing, either choosing not to do it or I'm choosing this other thing, puts you in a position where you're in control, as opposed to where I can't have it. You're out of control, and there's some, obviously some feelings and emotions wrapped around that. You mentioned with your son having to put 20% aside as it comes in. And I hear people talk about, you know, different percentages, and you should live off of this much and put this much away. Or do you have yourself, do you have like a formula or, you know, set of percentages that are ideal, or, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I like 20% because it has a lot of room in that. I know in the past people have said, say, 10%, but the reality is we're living longer and things are getting more expensive. So 20%, like at 20%, if that's in the stock market and it was earning 10% on average, your income will be replaced within 20-ish years if you're saving 20%, which is massive. So I'm not saying that you would then go to, like, don't necessarily quit your job. It's up to you. But if you think of someone in their 20s, and it's all relative depending on how much they're earning, if they put 20% away, by the time they're in their 40s, that money that they put away and is invested should be earning as much as they're spending every year, which is huge if you think about the freedom. So again, so that's where, for me, when I'm thinking about choice, usually when I'm looking at something, I'm not thinking of it in terms of what I could buy instead. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the freedom. I'm thinking, how many years of work will this take, or do I want more freedom and more time with my kids? And I view it under that framework because I see how much the money can earn. And especially once you start going out 10, 20 years. And that's what's incredible. So really, and again, there's no promise with that, but those numbers, if you were earning that average, which is what the stock market has earned, that 10% average, and you took 20% of what you made and put away for 20 years, you will be earning in that, like, basically replacing your income. And then what's crazy is, if you did it for another 27 or 30 years, you'd be earning double your income. So it grows fast, and it's incredible. And that's still, you're still at a young age at that point. So if our kids figure that out, the impact's massive, even for our spenders. It doesn't matter if they're spenders or not. That'll have that same impact.
Okay. And so you're talking about sort of taking that 20% and investing it into the stock market. Do you have, are we just investing in SPY, VTO, VTO? Like, or where are we, what are we investing in? Because I'm sure guys have questions in terms of like, all right, I'm going to put in stock market. I'm going to put it into, you know, whatever the hottest thing is, you know. So what do you suggest in terms of that?
For sure. And people want to get into the weeds and the details. And so I'll go into that, but just quickly, and this is what I say in the book as well, this stuff, people think you have to understand all the nuances. There's experts that can help you out. Like most people who are investing don't even know what they're investing in. Yep. So number one, find someone you trust and work with. You don't have to know all this stuff yourself. So that I would say is number one. But then the next thing is, it's almost impossible to beat the stock market. Nobody does over a long period of time. So don't even try. So the game is trying to get the average of the stock market, not beat it. So invest in the stock and invest in the entire stock market. Like you said, so SPY is a great find, like the entire stock market, these ETFs that exist that allow you to do that. Because then now you don't have to worry about Tesla, what's Elon Musk going to say? What's going to happen? Is it going up? Is it going down? There's so much risk versus the entire stock market and the entire economy. That's a much better risk tolerance. And then in terms of market timing, same thing. Instead of trying to time the market and think, is it really high right now? Is it going down? Is it going up? If you're always investing, so if you did that 20%, so every time a paycheck came in, and if you're getting paid once a month or every 2 weeks and you're investing, it doesn't matter if it's at the top or the bottom, because it's going to average out. And so you're going to time the market at the average, which again, is much better than market timing, because market timing is almost impossible. And so that's really it. You build in the habit, so it just automatically goes in the stock market. When it comes in, you average out the time, you average out the entire market, and chances are going out 10, 20 years, you're going to get that average of 10% or very close to it.
Yeah. So dollar cost averaging, just kind of over time, you're buying high and low. It doesn't matter. You're putting it in. And the cool thing about it is, because you're thinking about it in the long term, if it's down right now, it doesn't matter. I'm putting it in for another 10 years anyway, right? If it's up right now, that's really cool. And I can tell people about it, but it doesn't matter. It's staying in there until whatever I retire or whatever.
Exactly. Well, that takes all that stress. Can you think of all the stress of watching the markets? It's going to consume your days. You're going to get worried about it. If it's up, you're going to feel great. If it's down, you're going to be having a bad day and unhappy. It takes away that stress. And again, I like that you said 10 years, 20 years out, because that's the thing is, most people, when we're talking about this, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 1 or 2 years. And that's what we're not talking about. We're talking about for the long term, because this becomes retirement that you can draw and give you that freedom. So if you want to take a sabbatical from work, or if you want to choose a job that pays a little less that you love instead of one that you're forced to pay, or if you want to have complete financial freedom, all this leads towards it. But we're talking 20 years out, 30 years out, creating that freedom. So think of it in that long-term time frame, and the new, what happens today doesn't matter.
Gotcha. I have a question, but somebody asked, and before I ask my question, I'll let them kind of go. They asked, how do you compensate for when you want to take your money out, let's say 20, 40 years down the line, if the market is bad at that time, what are you doing to buffer that? Or are you just waiting? This is not the year I take it out. I'm gonna wait till next year. What do you do then?
There's definitely, that gets trickier. So you're going to want to start investing more and more conservatively the closer you get to a point where you know you'll have to be drawing this money out. But again, ideally, you would never touch the principal. You would take money that it's earning. So if your money was making, interest, you're spending the interest ideally. So the principal always stays the same. So that money continues to grow and make money for you. So even if you took it out at a bad time, it's not going to have a massive impact on your portfolio. But if you knew that, okay, I'm going to take it all out and I'm going to buy a boat and I'm going to sail around the world, that's a whole different story. And you'll want to start being a bit more conservative, 5 years out, 10 years out, start investing a little bit more conservatively if you know you're taking a lump sum.
Gotcha.
But I'm seeing that money never being touched, ideally. And then that then becomes a legacy for your kids as well. So it's just live off what the money earns, not the principal itself.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So whatever the interest is, that's the part that's replacing your salary.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
because
And then
that'll go on forever.
Gotcha. Okay. Now my question was, I've got with my daughters, and I don't even know if I like this anymore, but we did it when they were really young, the 529 plan. And then just like setting up investment accounts, custodial investment accounts for them as they're little, and I'm putting the money in. This is before they start earning allowances and all those things. What do you think is like the best situation in terms of that? Like, what should, like, if I'm just a new dad, I'm starting out, I want to make sure I'm investing in my kid and making sure that they're going to be set up, when they're 40 and ready to do whatever. What would you suggest?
Like in terms of like how like an amount or
No, well,
how
no, not the
where
amount, just
give all this money.
yeah, right, yeah. Just what should I be setting up, or what should I be thinking about doing at least, as we start to want to set them up for investments.
I'd always go with simplicity. So for me, like my goal, like if I think of like financial freedom, for example, it's not thinking about money. So anything you could set up automated. So if it was one of those things where you're like, I could set up this custodial account and I could have this, whatever percentage you feel comfortable with automatically just going into it and it goes in on a monthly basis. And you could tell your kids you're doing this for them and have that conversation, but having it just automated, like that's the biggest thing. Because if we set things up, we'll forget about it. So you set up a bank account. And then you're like, oh, I haven't put any money in there for a while. So then you just drop a bunch of money in. All of a sudden, now you've lost the whole market timing aspect because it's not going in on a regular basis. And it's these little chunks here and there, and it's choppy, and you're forgetting about it. Set up a system because once the system's set up and it's a small amount that you're not, it's not going to impact and you're not going to notice, then you can just set it and forget it and not think about it. Like that's how I think all our finances should be, something that we don't think about. Because we don't realize, like you said, like you grew up poor, I grew up with less, and then we suddenly had more money. But what I've noticed is as you have more money, you just spend it. So if you create that little ceiling of so much is just off the top taken away, it'll be something you adjust to and you won't even notice it. So set up those automated systems, however you do it. And same with the kids. And if it's with kids and you're not doing it on their behalf, but you're doing it for them, then I just have it as a system where every time they got money for Christmas or birthdays or whatever it is, then just automatically be like, okay, we're going to take this percentage and go to the bank and save it. And you could do that with them.
Okay. Yeah, I figured that, that might be a question that would be out there, somebody might have, so I wanted to ask, get your expert opinion. With another question, I think we might have answered this already, and I don't even know if it's a question, it might be more of a statement, but I'm gonna read it anyway just to see. How do you look at teaching kids about money and the value? Nowadays it all goes digital without really having an experience of value, like spending a dollar is as easy as spending $100. What do you think about that? How do you and that's actually very, very, that's actually a very good question, because my daughters, they don't really ever have cash, right? And when they do, it's almost like they don't even care about it. Like, they don't appreciate the actual paper money. Like, they'll have it like balled up or like folded into like these little things. You know what I mean? Like, I've never, even now to this day, like, I make sure that they're all facing the same way, that they're, when they're in my wallet, they're in denominations, like in descending order. Like, I'm very conscious about it. And they're like, they're just, I think I have some money, and it's like they're pulling stuff. It's like pulling paper out of the trash or something.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, because there's a lot of different people who think, differently about that. Like having the physical cash, definitely you have that physical representation. So it's easier to see what's happening. And even as adults, people say like, if this is your spending money, have it as cash. You can see once it's gone, it's gone. You don't have anything else. And I mean, that's not a bad thing. I'm about efficiency. So I don't mind the digital currency. I rarely have cash myself. And so more importantly, I think of like what I really locked into with that question is the value. How do we teach them value? And that's what happens is like we always talk about this. We wish our kids understood the value of money. And this is where conversations with our kids becomes really, really important because you can't understand value if you don't know how much things cost. So instead of making money this taboo subject we don't talk about, the more we can start having conversations with our kids, like, hey, we just went for dinner. This is how much the bill cost. We just went swimming. This is how much it cost us to get into this rec center. And so they can start getting an idea of how much things cost. Or as they get older, maybe even telling them, like, this is how much our house costs, this is how much I earn. And so they can just start getting a bit more of a framework. And then that is going to teach them values. And then they understand, like, oh, this dinner was really expensive. I could have, bought all these other things with that same amount of money. And they can start appreciating the dinner differently. Because that's what we also do that as parents all the time, too. Like, they don't even appreciate this stuff. So having these conversations really helps them understand the value so they can start appreciating it. Because there's no way they can appreciate it if they don't even know how much the thing cost.
Yeah, there's something that we do, and actually it was something that me and my wife did before we had kids. We used to kind of do as a game when we go out, is we go out to eat and you would have to guess the total, right? And then whoever was the closest was the winner, right? We do that with our kids now. And it's really cool to see them, like, as we're ordering, like trying to find it on the menu, like try to do a little math and try to figure out what it's going to be. But it's also really good now at the ages they're at, because now they're having to kind of figure out what the tax is, what the tip might be. They're understanding, like, oh man, that was an $18 burger. Like, we could get a $3 or $4 burger. Like, are we like, do I, it better be really, really good. They're starting to think. And now that they're not, well, my oldest isn't on the kids menu anymore. She's looking at these meals like, oh, I think I might just want to get, I just might want to get chicken tenders and fries. Like, so, I don't know if that works for everybody else, but it makes for us for sure them aware of like how much things cost. And we do the same thing with when they go shopping. And it's easier now too that they like to spend their own money, because now they have an account for, if I want to get this shirt from Tilly's, it's a $27 t-shirt. I don't know if I like it that much, So they're starting to kind of do the math on things and kind of figuring out what is, as you mentioned, and as this is titled, the awesome stuff. Do I really enjoy this shirt? Do I really, really want to have, this steak that I'm not even gonna fully eat, So I just wanted to throw that out there because it's something that works for us to kind of get them the idea of value of things, or how much things cost. Maybe not value, because they still aren't paying for it, so they're like, yeah, whatever. But at least they know how much things cost, and they can kind of, reference it.
Well, and that's what they, so once they know how much things cost, they values get going to be different for everybody. So that same shirt or that same meal is going to have different value to different people.
What's up, fellas? Hey, are you ready to supercharge your journey to becoming the best version of yourself? Introducing the Fatherhood Roadmap, the ultimate guide for every man. Uncover the secrets to success and 10 must-do principles. Focus your energy, guard your time, train your mind and body, think for yourself, curate your friends and environment, keep your promises, stay cheerful and constructive, and upgrade the world. Now, I know you're not going to remember all of those, and that's why it's in the book. You got to go ahead and grab it. Elevate your game, redefine your path, and embrace the power of positive change. Are you ready for the roadmap to greatness? Head over to www.forfeitfatherhood.com and grab your copy today.
And so that's the beauty of it. As soon as they understand, they can figure out what where their value lies and if it has value to them. So that's again back to the awesome stuff. I don't tell people what their awesome stuff should be. Like that's very personal. And that's what's a little bit different is understanding what's really important to you. So then like you could tell your kids, like, hey, for me, like this is important to me. This is the awesome stuff for me. This has value for these reasons. And it's going to be different for everybody. But they can start thinking, like, hey, you know what? I would rather have five of these shirts that are cheaper than one of these ones that's more expensive. I'd rather go to the grocery store and let's just get a bunch of stuff and make burgers because the meal is going to be so much cheaper, and I don't value the service or the restaurant or experience. Where someone else would be like, you know what, I love, like for me, one of my favorite memories is when we do family dinners and go out and have these experiences. So it's going to be different for everybody, but you can't understand that unless you know the cost. And then once you know the cost, then you can start equating things.
Yeah, I agree. I think for us, it's both, right? We enjoy the time out, you know, going out and enjoying like these new places. And things like this weekend, we're going to Arizona for my daughter's softball tournament. And there's a place out there that has like these giant pancakes. It's a breakfast place and the pancakes are huge. And it's like one pancake is supposed to feed like four people. So we're like, oh man, we got to go to this place. And it is a, I mean, four people, it's a priced pancake. And so, you know, it's, that's going to be really cool when it's the experience. But then also we could just make pancakes at the Airbnb. Like we could definitely do that a lot cheaper. We get to experience that together as a family. But then also when we stay home and we cook together, there's a whole nother experience where we get to enjoy and get, you know, get pancake mix on our faces. And like we, you know, we have. And so it just depends, I think. And that's why I like that you allow people to kind of choose your own awesome stuff. Because I think for us, they're both valuable. I just don't think we can do either one all the time. Mm-hmm. So we kind of do both.
Yeah. Well, I love how you're saying it too. Like this, parents listening into this, this is the, like, this is how finance should be taught to our kids, I think. So it's not this big lesson. It's, hey, we're going to go get pancakes. These are how much they cost, but I'm so excited because they're massive pancakes. And you'd see, like, I could picture all of you just getting excited. Like you're starting to grin as you're talking about it and getting excited. Like that's all it is. It's just, they're like, oh, okay, you know what? Like, I know these are expensive pancakes, but this is why this is important to us in this moment. And that's, I mean, there's the finance lesson. It's as simple as that. It's just having conversations.
Yeah. All right, we're coming up on, I don't know. I mean, people are still jumping in and jumping out and getting, this is good, you know, good stuff. If you had to give three takeaways or maybe more of what a parent should know in terms of investing. You know what I want to ask you? Let me ask you this before. What is your favorite investment vehicle for a parent? You know, if I'm talking about trying to invest, I don't know, for my family, maybe not necessarily just for my kids, but just for my family, what should I be considering? I know we mentioned the stock market, and that's obviously one that's on a longer term scale. But outside of that, is there anything else that you suggest that we look into or start to think about?
Simplicity, I don't think you can beat the stock market, especially because they have these, you know, mutual funds or ETFs that allow you to just invest in the entire stock market. It's really, really easy. So finding a financial advisor and just sort of saying like, I want to set up dollar cost averaging. I want to invest in the entire stock market. What can you do to help me out? That's going to be the easiest and simplest. Personally, like I love real estate, but it's because I've been investing in real estate for over 20 years. And there's a lot of things I've learned through that period where I wish I knew 20 years ago. Like it's just a lot more complicated, and I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it. It's time consuming and it's risky and it's no better necessarily. And then if people start thinking of like these other things, like, you know, Bitcoin or specific stock, like they're very hot. And we hear about the people who've had these big wins, but again, take into account the risk involved with those things. So those aren't things that are long-term holds. You can't own those things and forget about it and know in 20 years it'll still be around. So understand that there is a gamble involved with that. And so what I'm talking about is like, when I talk about investing, there should be no gamble. So think of like a Warren Buffett. He's got billions of dollars and he's not investing in these things, even though he could afford it. He views it as, no, what's a long-term play where this has value that's going to be around in the next 10, 20 years. So I would make sure that when you think about this, you don't mix investing and, you know, just going in and risking things like gambling. You know, they're very, very different. And you can make money gambling, but it's not an investment.
Got it. Okay. That is it. So let's go back now. So maybe that actually might be one of them or all of them. but you know, like I said, maybe three things that people should be able to take away from this, and maybe, you know, go be active. Maybe some practical takeaways for parents and fathers before we hop off.
Yeah, I mean, the big one right now. So, I mean, I talk about a few things in the book, and I love talking about compound growth. I have a whole chapter on giving, which is really important to me. But if we just stick with the mindset piece, and mostly because that's a piece we don't talk about enough, and it's rarely talked about in the finance world, of just pausing and reflecting. So as I'm trying to build more of a movement around this, get people really excited and change the way we think about money, I'm trying to put out just a 7-day challenge. So for 7 days, every time you're thinking of buying something, pausing and just asking yourself, is this the awesome stuff? And that's it. It doesn't matter what the decision is afterwards, but if for 7 days you have that pause, every time you're thinking of buying something, it'll change the way you start to perceive all of your spending and the decisions you've been making and have that shift. And so if you can do that for 7 days, and ideally ask 2 or 3 of your friends to join you in this challenge, knowing that the whole purpose is just to create a little bit more money mindfulness so we can start to break this endless chasing of more, that for me is the takeaway. And then even better, then go to theawesomestuff.com. Tell me what you've done. Tell me what you found your awesome stuff is. Send me a video or any information. Like, I love this stuff. And just start getting people engaged of, you know, thinking about money a little differently. And it takes all those conversations back to, like I said, with the child, instead of them being told they can't afford the ice cream or even the Starbucks. Hey guys, is this your awesome stuff? And let your daughters pause and think, like, is that the awesome stuff? Or is there something else I'd really want that's really important to me? And that's the conversation, instead of, no, we can't get it. And then the Starbucks 5 minutes down the road, no, we can't get it. And telling them we can't afford it when really you can. It's a choice. Is this the choice you want to make?
All right, man, that was awesome stuff. That was definitely, and from what I see here in the comments and from what I gained from this was really good. And I think maybe we can do this more often, man. I'd love to continue to talk to you about this, because I think it's really, really important. As I mentioned at the beginning of this thing, that it's one of the four pillars that I think is really, really important for fathers to make sure that we handle, take care of. And I know finance and money is one of those taboo things that people don't want to talk about or have guilt or shame around. But it's one of those things that we have to make sure that we master. And being able to talk to somebody who is in that space, who is doing the thing, all right, and then sharing the knowledge, is really good for all of us. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on, for reaching out and being able to have the space to come and share with us, because it's much needed.
For sure. No, I really appreciate it. And for me, this is all just purely passion and trying to share this message and get it out there. So, you know, thank you for giving me the space as well.
Yeah. Guys, if you aren't already, go ahead and make sure you follow David at The Awesome Stuff. If you haven't, and I've got to go do it now. And I've got to go do it now. I got to go get the book. And actually, is it better for you if we go to theawesomestuff.com or if we go to Amazon? Because I know Amazon takes a couple of dollars from you each time.
Amazon always takes a couple of dollars. The nice thing, if you come through me through a website, theawesomestuff.com, then I actually know, like, you can stay in contact with me.
Got it.
If you go through Amazon, I do have a newsletter, so feel free to sign up for that. So then I can send you information on, like, how to have these conversations with your kids, especially I've got a step-by-step through the book to just go through and really talk to your kids. So I love that. The nice thing through Amazon is if you do buy through Amazon and then want to leave a review for me, that always helps as well. I mean, that gets the word out, gets more people, you know, coming across and stumbling across the book. So Amazon, leaving a review is great. Otherwise, come through me directly through theawesomestuff.com and we'll get you the book as well.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll have to do both, right? Because I want to leave a review. But Amazon's not going to let me leave a review for free. So I'll do both. How often does a newsletter come out?
So I'm trying to send it out monthly. Lately, it's been every few months, but yeah, I just try to
No,
send no more frequently than
I
once a
was
month of just like
say no,
what's been going
that's
on.
fine, man. I've signed up and subscribed to enough things where I'm like bombarded with newsletters to the point I can't read them. So once a month is good.
Yeah,
Once a month is good. I can't
once a month, here's what's going on. Here's
Right?
some things to know.
Between like writing my own newsletter and reading other people's newsletters, I'm newslettered out, but I would like to see something on the financial piece for children and for myself. And so I definitely want to get on that. I'm a newsletter junkie, and I'm trying to kick the
Sounds
habit.
good. We'll check it out and thanks so much. And yeah, let's have this keep continuing this conversation later on.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, have a good one, brother.
You too. Thanks.
You just tuned into another episode of the Forfeit Fatherhood Podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you once again for listening. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow me at You Can Call Me Coach on Instagram. Also follow the podcast at Forfeit Fatherhood, the number 4 and the letter U on You Can Call Me Coach. Go ahead and flip over to the next episode, man. I know you love this one, so you'll probably love the next one. Excited for you guys to hear it.